Sean, you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, I do. Small business red flags. So this is an area that I try to ignore. You know, you got green flags, yellow flags, and red flags, mm-hmm. but we don't like seeing the red flags, and we don't like dealing with them, but they usually end up having some sort of meaning down the road. And so we're going to talk about just some of our experience and things to look for in business and working with people and just in general, hustling out there, how to recognize trouble and deal with it before it gets you.
Yeah, man, that's a really broad topic. We can go a lot of different directions in it.
Broads are a good place to start. Red flags.
Oh my gosh. That's the corniest dad joke. Of course, it's from Sean.
Somebody had to do it. Yeah. I know. Somebody had to make
it. Broad. You guys should have a cigar. Yeah. You know, he says that. And a top hat. So red flags in small business, they can come in a lot of different ways. They can come in with employees. There's certainly red flag employees. They can come at red flags in the way that we run our business. Red flags and our technologies. But I'll say that the biggest red flag that I see, I look at a lot of small businesses to not only to purchase them, but to maybe to join up businesses. So I've seen a lot of other financials, and that's where I see the most red flags in small businesses. It breaks my heart to see beautiful, what you think is a really growing, thriving, great culture, good people, small business, and then look at a balance sheet and see hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt, or look at your P&L and see that they've been losing money for the past 24 months. And sometimes those small businesses are ones that I own and that I'm trying to lie to myself. And some of them are ones that I've looked at other books. But I want to discuss some red flags today that I see that can be killers and that we don't tackle. You know.
Yeah, and you just described a pretty common scenario that a person's been in business. I mean, what most businesses don't make it the first 3 years. If they make it three, that's a indicator that they might survive. Somewhere along the way, you survive the 3 years. And if you don't start out with debt, if you just organically grow it from zero, this is a pretty common one that I've run into over the years. They started from a dream, or maybe they leverage something that they have. They worked a job and decide they're going to join the marketplace. And they've got they have a credit score. They have some equity in their home. And
yep. And they've been pretty financially responsible individuals,
up to
right,
this
Sean?
Point. Up yeah. to this point. And they have a dream. Yep. And this is going to sound bad, but I hear this one a lot. God speaks to them.
And are you talking about Garrett?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, they had the heavens opened up and poured out this business plan on them. And next thing you know, they're $150,000 to $500,000 in debt.
Yep.
And they've got this expectation of living the lifestyle that they were living was as a W-2 employee.
Mm-hmm. Or better. Like okay. yourself, you said yeah. in one of our last episodes, I thought I was going to move in and
just take over.
Take over that lifestyle
step
of the
in.
Previous
and that, owner. And that works yeah. too, yeah. And so we walk into this role expecting that we're now going to be what TV tells us a small business owner is. We have freedoms, we have a membership at the country club, a BMW in the garage,
disposable income,
sailing trips in the summer or winter or both. What's the Lexus to remember? You know, let's put one under the tree with a bow on it. We're going to live that lifestyle.
Why is he talking about my life?
There we go. Here's well, I think you picked it.
No, I know. I got the red flags.
Yeah, you got the red bow on it. So you see these things, and it just looks perfect.
Yeah.
And it's not. We're still going to Starbucks. We're buying the $7, $10 coffees. We're driving the fine car. And now we've got kids that we're trying to get into college at this point, or we have a wedding to pay for, our daughter's wedding, or we're going to send our son off to this special school, or we're going to do whatever. And there's more debt that comes along with that. And there's a status symbol that we've created now, because now we're the small town business owner, and we have the appearance of being a big fish in a small pond. So now we have to maintain that. And the joke is, I've seen people maintain this majority of their career and seemingly never have to pay the piper, but they usually do. You rarely get out of this without some sort of stress. Sometimes you survive it, but your quality of life is so terrible. And it boils down to debt. We're living beyond our means to impress mm-hmm. people we don't know.
Yeah.
And yeah. Or we lie to our family. There's a story that I know about a man that just could not turn it off. The businesses had some great years, had a decade of good years, and then it was failing. And the industry changed, and he couldn't stop giving the money to his family because the lifestyle had they'd been accustomed
to. Yeah, he had to keep up the facade. Yeah. And, I've seen that as well.
And so that's a killer. So a lot of this, in my opinion, boils down to pride, our expectations. We don't want to fail ourselves. We don't want our dream to fail. And an unwillingness to take a step back. I think it was Jim Carrey might have said, if you're not willing to take a year away from what you want to rebuild the lifestyle, you'll never have what you need. Something to that effect. Sometimes you have to be willing to take a year and burn it, back up, punt, and restart. But we're not willing to do that because we're so deep. We're so far down that we can't come out. And then when someone shows up that wants to buy our business, our financials suck so bad, we don't even have anything to sell.
Yep.
And how many times?
Guilty. I've been guilty of that.
I've been guilty.
Absolutely.
I've been on the other side of it too. It's like, okay.
Pay off your debt.
You know what?
Yeah.
We get $5 for your customer's list and file bankruptcy, or I'm going to put you out just by calling one customer and put you out of business. Like, yeah. Compete with you. I don't want to, but I mean, it's that easy sometimes because you're so fragile and you don't even know it.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's just a dangerous place. So it's normal. So if you're in that position or you know someone in that position, it's just normal. It's not good. It's not healthy, but it's a normal thing. So we want to talk about some ways to discover, identify, cheat the system, learn from our mistakes, learn from other people's mistakes or observations where you can mitigate this early.
Yeah, let's start.
Let's identify. What are we looking for?
Let's start with debt is not normal and is your enemy. Let's start there. we've had this, you're not supposed to turn a profit until 3 or 4 years. Yeah, that's for big money startups, guys. It's not for small business owners that have a mortgage and a wife and a kids and all those kind of things. Like, debt is not your friend. Debt is your enemy. Treat it as such.
One of my favorite Dave Ramsey sayings is, I've never met a millionaire that got that way by using his Sky Miles or his credit card points.
Like, correct.
That didn't make him the millionaire.
No.
Or the millionaire.
That's always the side. Yeah, that's always the side things for it. But I see it all the time. It happened. And it's not good. I've seen businesses, and most of the time, it is with good intentions that we created the debt. Okay. A lot of COVID killed a lot of our small businesses. But I see a lot of small businesses that the government's coming to save you, which is one of the scariest sentences known to man. And everybody, one of our listeners out there, you can be as pro-government as you want. The government does not save your business ever.
And I want to jump in. Yeah, I think it was ahead. Warren Buffett said, I think it was a Ronald Reagan quote, right? The scariest words.
I think so.
Yeah. The government, I'm here to help. Warren Buffett said, you can tell who's swimming naked when the tide goes out. And COVID was the tide leaving. And there was a lot of small businesses that, yes, COVID killed a lot of small but fragile businesses. There was a lot of businesses that made it rain. The healthy ones did.
Yeah. And there were some that were just innocent bystanders. COVID made a lot of millionaires, too, for that matter.
For sure.
I mean, there's a bear in a bull market. You can make money in both.
So there's some innocent bystanders, but for sure. Anyway, I'm
there
sorry.
There is. No, but my point is the debt. So if you get there at the beginning and it's too much, or if you get there at the end, it's not good. Realize it as such. Do not normalize it. It's so frustrating that I'm as guilty as anybody else, right? When it's on my P&Ls or it's in my QuickBooks, it's not real numbers. Just like when we think of the trillions and trillions of dollars of our national debt, that's not real to us because it's not our personal bank account. That money is real money in our personal bank account. All that other stuff, we think it's fake money. No, that money is real too for a small business owner. Treat your business account as if it was your personal account, okay? And that's my number one, tip, pleading that I have for small business owners out there is, man, treat it like it's your personal.
So yes, treat
we
it
normalize
way.
It and we think it's okay. Oh, I'm going to get out of business because I can just make more money next year.
But let's break it down. And I think it's important to get in the weeds on this one.
Go ahead. Yeah, let's go.
Yes, it should be treated as if that money is coming out of your pocket because it is.
Because it is.
But also have a personal account because probably what's going to kill most businesses in 3 to 5 years is they didn't pay their taxes properly the first 2 to 3 years. So the next 3 to 5, it catches up with them. So yeah, you're going to put third or plus up, 33-35% has got to go away for taxes. And then you need a personal account. Don't buy your groceries out of your business account.
Do not do it. I see it all the time when I look at that. Stop using your businesses as your personal account.
It's not. You need at least two. At least two.
I think the biggest red flags in small businesses, and I beat up on the word all the time, is that like a lot of small business owners, they're overambitious with their scale, right? They don't understand what scale actually is. So what they do is they outspend their scale initially because they're like they do some market analysis, right? And they don't realize like what market share, like who has what market share out there. They don't do a SWOT analysis. They don't do those types of things, right? So they see these guys over here and it's like, okay, it took 3 million, right? Let's just say that or whatever it is. So foundationally, you can't spend that money, right? And even if you do have it and you can go get loans and leverage it, it's a terrible decision to try to start a business at the same scale as your competition. The most successful restaurant guys or restaurateurs start off with a food truck these days because you have low overhead. They understand scale. You build a clientele, you build a client base, you build loyalty, you do all those things. So if someone is starting a small business and say it's a service business or anything, right? And you could attest to this, Sean, because you worked in it was a field services situation. It makes more sense to start in your garage.
I can tell you a couple war stories. One, if you want to go broke, start a restaurant.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah.
And if you want to go broke twice the amount of time it takes you to go broke in a restaurant, go in the HVAC business.
Yeah.
We can go down this. The service industry is extremely hard. It's hard to scale past yourself.
Yeah.
A single person. So, yes, the most profitable years percentage-wise are when you have one pickup truck, one toolbox, and your health and your drive. Those are the most profitable. Then the next most important decision you're going to make is for first hire.
Yeah.
Who's going to help you? And then you just cut your profit in half. But so you have to do three times the work to maintain your income. So there are sacrifices that have to be made. You cannot save enough money on the front end.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't do it. I've never done it successfully. And I know people that, I mean, we talk about some of these major players out there that are doing billions of dollars in revenue and on cash, and their retained earnings is never where it needs to be because they're outgrowing their ability to save their retained earnings. So they have to manage your growth. We get ahead of our skis and we can outgrow it.
Yeah, I've made that mistake in small business too, is take on a project that's too big too early.
The wolf shows up.
Yeah.
The wolf shows up and it looks like somebody that says, I will give you, if you got a FedEx franchise truck or whatever, and your postal truck, whatever, your delivery stuff, you're doing great with this one route. We want to give you six more, but you're going to have to buy six trucks, which means you're going to have to hire six employees.
Which means you're going to take on tons of debt.
And you're not ready for that. And then you get one bad hire and it falls apart. And that blessing becomes a curse because you weren't ready to scale yet.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So how do we prevent that as a small business owner? So we've done this and we've made some of these mistakes. You know, we say that all the time, and we're living on a mountain of mistakes, right? Like, yeah, we are our success is culminated on top of a mountain of failures, right? You know, and I'm still failing today. You know, we talked about some of the things that you know are quote unquote failures that I'm going through in my business life too. And these are things that small businesses, the difference is I've planned for them and I've recognized them from the beginning, tried to make some smart decisions, probably held on too long, and that's okay. You know, yeah, I would rather hold on a little bit too long than not enough, but I know what I can afford to lose. And when I reach that threshold, it's time, yeah, you know, it's time to liquidate. And because I've had some successes, I'm afforded a few failures, yeah, you know, which is a nice thing. But I tell people all the time, you have to hit on your first one. Your first business endeavor is your most important, because not that you can't overcome a failure on your first one, because you absolutely can. There's stories of people who do it all the time, but it's going to set you back years.
Yeah.
God, it'll set you back years because of the debt. So how do we avoid these debts, Sean? I mean, what's a way to avoid some of these debts?
Knowing what I know now, asking me that question, moving forward, is to say we're going to start something.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, if it's a yard mowing business, I would pay cash for the equipment.
Okay.
I would save a minimum of 3 months operating expenses.
I like it.
Before I started. And then I would have the patience to not start with a crew. I would start with a minimum, maybe myself and a helper.
So you're working. You got billable hours,
and
baby.
I don't care if I've got $10 million in the bank and I want to scale this to a 200-employee thing. If I'm starting where I'm at right now, I want to take 6 months or a season and put my boots on the ground in that
right
industry. And that's gonna slow us down a year, a it season, is, if I just started off by hiring all those people.
So what would you say to the guy that says, hey man, look, you know, I know how to, and now look, I know you were in the electrical business, okay, and the service business before, but okay, I've had a lot more business. I know how to do it. I'm going to go ahead and just get me 6 employees right off the bat.
Well, let's do that. I've been in the electrical business.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's say I want to go back into it. Let's say the oil and gas shows up.
Yeah, you're going to go get you a loan because you don't have any money.
No, I'm not. Even. No, I'm not.
All right.
I am not going to do that.
That's what I wanted to hear. Because what are you going to do?
Here's what I'll do.
Tell me why.
I will scratch together whatever I have if it shows up today. And I've done it this way. And so I'll do it again this way, because this is a process that works.
Because this is a successful way, not this, the way. Because a lot of people think, oh, I don't want to go back on my tools. I'm too good to go back on my tools.
Maybe I don't go back in my tools. Maybe I find that electrician. But I have either no money. Let's say I'm starting with no money. I've got $100.
I'm going to drop you off in the middle of Kansas somewhere. Or you know people. Middle of Nebraska somewhere. Oh, yeah.
You know people everywhere if you know where to look. I don't necessarily know anybody in Nebraska, but you can find somebody that you know real quick. And that's a great point. And I got no money.
Yep.
But I got contacts and I've got knowledge and I got a few assets. I got a truck, toolbox, what I need to do.
Yep.
I'm going to start knocking on doors, and I'm going to grab some ham sandwiches and knock on some doors. I'm going to find the work and I'm going to sell the work. Then I'm going to find the employee and I'm going to sell the help that I got the work. And I'm going to sell the work that I got the help. And whichever one bites first, I'm going down that road.
Fair enough.
Okay. Then we did this in North Dakota. No work. Drove up there. Started knocking on doors. Are you on our vendors list? Sure. Well, this is catch 22. You got to be on the vendors list to do the work. Yeah. You can't get on the vendors list unless you got 6 months experience with that company. All it takes is one of them to slip up and let you work. And then you did a job and you're on the vendors list. Well, now you go to the next company. Well, I'm on the vendors list with that company. And inside of 2 weeks, you got more work you know what to do with. It happens that fast if you want to hustle in those environments. Now, that's a little out there, but that's a true story. That's not even embellished. Like, I did that.
So I like the principles that he starts off with. Just to kind of recap is start with what you have, bill your own hours, be who you are, and try to have at least 90 days worth of expenses. I think he would add to that, make sure your expenses are low so you have 90 days worth of your expenses.
You don't need to buy the new truck. You drive the truck you have.
That's right.
The tires might be a little slippery in the snow. You don't need a 3/4 ton diesel, King Ranch, Laramie Longhorn, F-350.
But that'll last
Duramax
me forever, Sean. It'll last me 8 or 10 years.
You don't need that to pull
well, your business might not last 8 or 10 years.
A 500-pound lawnmower.
Yeah.
You don't need that.
Yeah.
You don't need leather seats to pull it. It's amazing what a half-ton truck would pull in 1975 compared to now. And they did it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they look cool. Like, you don't need the fancy truck. You don't need the stuff. You don't even need your name on your shirt and a logo. You don't need a website. You need a job. You need the first job. And you work that long enough to get those receivables in. And then you got to sprinkle
you
it in.
You need a tax ID number.
You got to have a tax ID number. And you're going to need insurance along the way because some company's going to mandate that. That's right. You got to manage that. But you do need to get some cash jobs that pay right now. You're going to get some better ones that pay 30, 60, 90 days.
Correct.
You need today money. You need money that's going to pay on every Friday. You need money that's going to write every 2 weeks. There's companies that do this.
So
you need companies that pay monthly.
So for our audience out there, this is flowing into red flag number two, which is cash flow issues. The number one killer of small business is debt, from what I can see. Now, I'm calling this. This is not scientific. This is just, you know, my life experience. Number one killer is debt, of a brand new one or an existing one. I've seen it. I've seen debt kill as many existing 5, 10, 15-year-old businesses than anything else. But my number two killer for those same businesses is cash flow, like Sean's talking
so
about.
So receivables won't feed your children.
Nope.
Now, you will.
But you know what I can do? I can go get an AR line of credit.
Bang. It will feed your demise because I've got $200,000 in receivables.
It will allow me to get more debt.
And worse than that, there's companies that will pay you right now on your receivables for 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your profit margin's 11.
You know what? I'll start that business too. Anybody out there want me to buy your receivable? You know,
there's a lot 10%. Of them out there in this world. Yeah. Receivables, 10%. So you made 100 grand, you're going to get 90, but you got to eat today. Yeah. Well, you got to know what your margins are. If you're not making 20%, you're not making 10. Because you're giving 10% away because you weren't willing to wait 3 months before you started eating steak instead of cheeseburgers.
Yep.
So that's tough. If you skip this step, you're going to find yourself borrowing the money, out of business. The other one is getting greedy on the jobs, biting off more than you can chew. If you've got a 3-man crew, don't do it. Don't take on a 15-man job. Take on a 4-man job. Push them a little bit. Maybe you pay a little overtime. Maybe you say, hey, I tell you what, let's get this job done. I'll give you a week off, but I can't pay you overtime because we're a startup. And maybe you talk to them ahead of time and say, hey, look, we're kind of in this together. We're not, but you'll eat before I do, but I need your help. And, you know, there's people out there that will work with you and get you going. Talk to your vendors. Some of those vendors know because they've been there. They didn't get to be the company they are. Maybe that superintendent over that job or apartment complex once tried doing what you were doing and he has some sympathy for you and he might can cut some corners somewhere with his accounting to get you maybe a paycheck a little bit early because he knows you're a startup and you're trying to get going. Don't be so prideful that you won't go to that big company or that customer and go, hey, I'm trying to get going. I need some help. I'm going to give you a great service and I know you've got a 30-day pay, but if you could just give me a portion of it, I've already done the work. If you could just for the next 2 months, give me a little bit, a bump to kind of keep us going here because we want to maintain this. Working with your vendors, working with your customers. Talk to them.
I'm with you, man.
Okay, 1,000%. And I'll tell you another one. Talk about debt, vendor debt. So right on the heels of all this, your vendors are going to show up and you bought a part and you sold it and you made 35, 40% on that part. You do that 2 or 3 times and they're going to call you up and they're going to send you a little form to fill out where you can just charge those parts off. You pay them once a month just to make your life easier. So you don't have to send somebody up there with a debit card.
Yeah, so that way you're net 30 a little bit. So it helps with the cash flow.
Right. So
for the record, we're not against this.
No.
You know, we are pro this. Instead of paying cash on hand every single time you get one, which I've got a small business that I'm a part owner in and I'm a minority owner and I cannot get the majority owner to get away from it. He likes to pay cash on hand, which, you know what, when you can do it, great. You know, and he does get paid quicker, so he doesn't have the net 30, net 60 that some other businesses does. So it works out okay, but, man, I wish I could get him off of that.
Yeah, you know? Cool, because what happens the first time you're short and it's Christmas time and you get your kids Christmas presents and you just don't pay that week's vendor's debt?
And guess what? They're going to learn that mistake when one time they're going to have to come to me and be like, hey, we're short. I'm like, because you have so much out right now. We've been killing it, working real hard, yet I don't have any money to pay for this part that's coming in. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm waiting for that to happen. It hasn't, so maybe it never happens, you know. But as soon as it does, I'm gonna be like, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah. That's why you go net 30, you know.
Yeah, so that happens. And I know we're just kind of walking through this step by step. But so now we've got ourselves, we've been in business for 4 or 5 months now. And we've got some receivables coming in. We're kind of making it, and it's kind of flowing. And the next thing you know, we're starting to pick our head up a little bit. And maybe our ego starts creeping in.
Yeah, talk to me.
Okay, a year goes by, and we look at it, and we even file our tax return and pay our taxes, and we got money left over.
Yeah, so what are we going to do with that money, Sean?
Well, you have a choice now. Your family just suffered with you for 18 months trying to get you here, or a year. You going to take them on vacation? You going to Disney World?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you finally have retained earnings?
Yes, this is a huge issue. It's a lost art form. Nobody keeps earnings in their bank account. It drives me batty when I see these small businesses. And look, I've read your books too about, oh, you should pull everything out of the business. No, not small business owner. Maybe major corporation, yeah, that's fine. You can work on some AR lines of credit and stuff like that. Quit doing that stuff. Like, you don't have to leave a ton, but like I said, like I have a business that's been in business for 12 years and we have a ton of retained earnings in there. And I'm just now going to cut it in half because I have a decade worth of information saying I'm never going to go below this number right here. Why do I have twice that much in the account, you know? And I have availability line of credit, so I can do what I need to do, you know? So it's, and because personally I've had enough wealth that if I needed to pull the money out, I can go save the business. So, but as a small business owner, you don't have that. Retain those earnings. Do not buy that brand new car. Wait 3 or 4 years instead of the first year, right, Sean?
Yep, because the transmission just goes out. The transmission goes out the day after you book the vacation.
Yep,
it happens every time. Or you finally buy the new truck and you get in an accident, somebody hits you, and you didn't cause the wreck, but now your insurance is going to double. I mean, it's just...
Get your nest egg built.
Your expenses go down.
I feel like as humans, like once the pressure's off a little bit, then we just start making it rain. We go out to the steakhouse every single week. Now, look, I'm all for celebrating the wins. When you get your first year in business, go eat at the steakhouse, baby. You know, go take a nice, you know, long trip. But, man, build your nest egg before you start loosening them up. You know, and then normally, you start giving your jobs to your guys instead of working them yourself. How many times have you seen that, Sean?
Oh, yeah. So normally we're 10, 15 years into holding this pattern. And we can't figure out why we can't break that ceiling, whether it's $1 million top line revenue, which is a weird ceiling for a lot of companies. You know, you got the the $0 to $100,000, and then you got the $100 to $500, and then you get over $1 million. If you can do that and just creating revenue, that's a step. And then getting over 3 is another big hurdle. And then 10, I think, is the next really big hurdle. And every one of these has new levels of troubles and ways of operating. You're not going to operate a $5 million a year business the way you operate a $1 million. It's different.
I don't know. The principles are the same.
Principles are the same, but there are some scaling effects that, you know, you somewhere along the way, you got to have a vision for this thing. You got to have a mission statement. I mean, you got to know what you're doing, why you're doing it. You have to have a reason behind it. You have to start sharing your vision with your employees. Where are we going? Why are we doing this? Otherwise, they're just showing up for a paycheck, Garrett.
Yeah, there's an anatomy of the business. You got to start building the team. You know, there's a lot of things we're going, but I want to focus on red flags.
So yeah. Let's stop there. And we got us to, we're a year, 18 months in business. We got a little bit of cash. We didn't borrow any money. And now we're set up for danger. Because
we've had success.
We've had success.
Past success, you know, that's the number one
now we're gonna
enemy
start
of future success.
Look, the people start showing up, start putting things on automatic payment contracts.
Yeah.
It's just, okay, so we're there. We're here.
Yeah, I think you did a lot of the things, you know, to talk about startups, new businesses, your first 3 years. you know, fight debt, you know, you're the third monkey trying to get on the Noah's Ark kind of thing, you know, and it's starting to rain, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's one I heard, but, you know, just, you know, fight like your life depends on it against debt, you know. The second thing is work on cash flow, pay attention to your cash flow. Work with what you have, be efficient, fight complexity with the best of them. You don't want, there'll be a time for that, to try to become complex.
Yeah. That's the sales pitch for me, where a lot of businesses get to this point and it's time to stop. And now you need to get an education on how to run a business. Listening to this podcast is more than what got you here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we're not even great at it. We're just okay.
That's right. That's right.
So get some people in your life that know how to do it better. And so here's a red flag. Think you got it figured out.
Yes.
I got this. Here's one. I don't need any more help because look what I did.
Yeah.
That's a red flag.
The thing I see that I guess is the biggest red flag to me is that most like young entrepreneurs or small business owners, they don't understand they don't understand cost, like true cost of their business. Right?
They underestimate it. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And like there should be a percentage that you have a threshold of what variable costs, you know what I mean? What your variable costs can make up and all that. Because if you don't understand your cost, then you really don't understand what you're charging for your product. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, because and that's the thing that I see with a lot of small business owners is that they come out with this call, like what their price for their service or for their product is. It's at this point and you say, well, how'd you get to that number? Like, well, that's what the market dictates. So you're, if the market's dictating that and you,
it's $1 cheaper than the other guy.
Well, no. So say you're competing against all these big box stores. Right. And you're a small mom and pop shop, right? Or you're just getting into this business. Well, these people are dealing in volume. You're not dealing in volume. Your price can't be the same. You know what I mean? And it's foolish
why would I buy from you?
Relationships.
How am I going to get customers?
Yeah, relationships, service, like the ease of doing. Like, so when you're a small business, the main thing you should be focused on is the ease of doing business with you.
Preach. Like, continue.
That should be what it is, because your cost is not going to be the same as these other people's cost. So you have to fight Goliath with a rock. You're David, slaying Goliath. Like,
yeah.
And that was
a miracle, people. Yes. Like, this is not, it's not meant to happen that way.
But you have to be quick on your feet. You have to be nimble and agile enough to understand, okay, this is what my cost is. Right. Like, and I think that I get that because of my sales background. Right. Like, I had a nut I had to bust every single month, and I would see that number and I understood that number. And as I started digging into the P&Ls, I understood how much revenue I had to generate. At what percentage to be in profit, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't become a good businessman until I understood cost.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, not only that, Garrett, is understanding costs and your profit margins or your net revenue or however you want to call it, you'll know how to bid those.
Yeah.
Almost every, when you first start out, you underbid. You think that's the way you're going to win the business.
Yeah.
Like Sean said, at some point, you got to have a clear vision of why, you know, how are you going to differentiate yourself from the Walmarts of the world, you know.
There are, so here's we're talking about red flags.
And if you can't differentiate yourself, that is a red flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a red flag.
So here's a catch.
Let me say this. If you can't differentiate yourself other than cost, that's a red flag.
That's an issue.
You don't come to me about, I'm just going to beat them in cost. Not forever.
No, because
they've been doing this 20 years, bro.
Yeah. But your internal cost is going to be too high because they can afford to be lean in profits because their ARs are fat. You get what I'm saying? Like, they have different things going on. So when if you're a small business owner competing with a corporation, and you don't know your cost, and you can't tell me why your price point is where it's at, then we got problems, man.
So let's say you're a semi-industrial service business.
Okay.
And you're dealing with industry or you're dealing with commercial areas, and you make it to that $3 million mark. that $4 million mark, and you're in a community that's got a couple million people in it, and you're covering 300-mile radius.
Okay.
This is a pretty common service company size.
Sounds
right?
like every service company, okay. small service company on the Gulf Coast.
So you get there, and you think you got it because you went from nothing to that in 4 or 5 years. Well, at some point, you start putting your name on stuff. You start giving away shirts. You start sponsoring things. You start getting your name out there. Why? None of that got you there. Has anybody ever sold a service contract to an industrial client because they had a billboard? I mean, maybe. But
I mean, the big boys do it. I see, you know, I see.
But are they doing it for pride?
They
or
do
prestige?
It when they move into a new market to get their name out.
Recognition does help.
It does.
But not in the beginning, not in the inception. And I'm not going to lie to you, $3 million and 300 miles, that's too.
That's my point.
Yeah, you're spread too thin.
That's my point. So here's what happens. Your competition realizes it, who is $30 million.
Yeah.
And they go, you know what? We could lose three next year to get rid of this guy.
Yeah.
And they cut all their prices for a year and put you out of business. Or you have predatory customers who are smart enough to know that you're hungry and a little ambitious, and you might underbid some stuff just to get their work.
Yeah.
And they'll go, hey, we'll give you a taste, but we want to get it for this price. And if you can earn it, blah, blah, blah. Well, they're just using you to get a low price.
Yeah.
And they really do that.
Yeah,
like,
it's predatory. It absolutely is, and but yeah, so that
you will go broke chasing those dreams.
So I have an email in my inbox right now from another market. We just got a new client in, who's a big client for us on the Gulf Coast, but in that market they're new to us. And you know, we already gave them special pricing, because you know, to the person that they were using is a small business that I think just doesn't understand their market or their value, and it's way under. So we kind of gave them some special pricing the best we could, but now they're already coming back within a couple months saying, hey, I want you to match it exactly.
Oof.
I want you to match it. I'm like, hey man, I already met you halfway. And it's the, not the guy that I deal with. It's the head operations guy's looking at numbers, and he says, you know, and then what I'm going to tell them is no. We're better than they are. And we've already given you, you know, gotten you pretty close. That's not sustainable.
I wonder if these same head guys from corporate walk into McDonald's and negotiate lunch that way. Or does McDonald's
They only lean on people they think they can.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, well, and especially with what I do for them, I'm like, dude, go cheap on your safety glasses or something, man. Go cheap on your paper towels.
So the red
don't
flag
go cheap on
here,
what I do.
Is that single ply toilet paper?
Go get that single ply toilet paper. I want to, and I want to actually reply like that. Hey, man, there's other places to cut costs. This is not one of them.
Yeah,
I've already done you a solid. I am what I am. If you start using, you know, my competitor again, you were using them when you came over here a few months ago. Like, and I never would have done that before. And as a small business owner, I would have died. Like. Me 8 years ago would die hearing me now say
so
this.
So let me ask this question. If you had learned this principle 8 years ago, would you have done things differently?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have. I don't know if that would hurt. I'm going to find out, I guess. But I feel like I need to value my service. You know, like for the first time, like I'm confident enough to go, man, we're good. Yeah. I've done a lot of things to make us better than our competition. And I'm worth $2 more.
Previous podcast we were talking about.
Like Chick-fil-A doesn't try to match prices with freaking Burger King or McDonald's, right? Because they're a little bit better, right? I mean,
a little bit better.
Yeah.
No one gets in the business to break even. Like, why do I want to break even? Like, why do I mean, there's going to be losses in business. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying failures, losses. Every business, you're going to have a job loss. You're going to have somewhere where you lose something. But that's why you have KPIs and everything.
Well, let's step on a few more toes here. Why did you buy that fancy car? Not you, Brian, with your Lexus. We're just giving you a hard time. But why did you buy that thing? Well, I needed to spend some money. It's a write off. You have you're a residential plumber, and you have got a $300,000 excavator, and you need a Mini X. Like you need a $50,000 excavator. it's got a cab air conditioning, and you know, like,
good. I can find a write off that's an investment, not a not a liability.
A boat is not a write off.
No,
it's not an invest. I mean, you can do it. You can kind of fudge the numbers and play. A lot of people do, but your hunting lease isn't a write off. You don't need to take your customers on that many hunting trips.
Go make an acquisition, buy another business. Like, spend your money elsewhere, bro.
Yeah.
No, not. I'm investing in your people. I think that's a red flag for me too. Is I don't see. Look, instead of trying to compete in low ball work, right? If you're running into the same people in the market, and you know that there's a talented guy that's at a big corporation, my mindset is totally different than everybody's. I'm not trying to be lower than him. I'm trying to not buy him. I can't buy him. He's not.
No, you want to bring like-minded people on your team, right?
Yeah, I love that. And so I've got too much money. I need a tax write-off. What a novel idea. Invest in your people.
Yeah.
Invest in a quality employee. Now, in my field, it doesn't work. It's not part of what my core values are. And it could. It had to be really, you know, like, it had to be a really specific hire.
Maybe you invest in their infrastructure instead of your personal joy.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Instead of...
get them new office chairs or something.
That's right. No, even that, man. I mean, that you're invested in employee relations.
And technology.
Technology, softwares. Yeah.
Well, that's...
Education. That, like,
yeah.
You know, educate your employees, you know. Well, grow your employees.
Yeah. You know? Well, no, that's the foundation of everything. It is your employees. Like, if an entrepreneur or owner of a business without employees, you're never going to reach your maximum potential unless you're a consultant. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because the more employees that you have, and if you can teach your employees to be stewards of the business, right? Well, not only are you going to grow other entrepreneurs, and eventually they might leave you and become your competitors, but that's even a healthy thing. I'd be proud of that. But realistically, like, if we're not growing our people, we're not growing our business. So you have to, like, that's the foundation of the business. And a lot of small business people that I've seen, it's that they have this weird ability to treat their employees as if they're indebted to them, right? Like,
their employees are indebted to their employer?
Yeah, and I've seen it in a lot of small businesses.
They know you because...
Yeah, because you say the employee is struggling with his finances and they might give him a cash advance, okay. You know, or they do these things and then they lord that over them and stuff like that. That's a red flag. And when I'm looking at a small business, because typically those are the small businesses that become stagnant because, like, they're not stewards, they're lords. If that makes any sense.
Well, they're not teaching their employees to be financially independent.
Exactly.
They're teaching them to be dependent upon them.
Yeah.
So it gives control.
Yeah. But I've heard stories of, I think, no, it wasn't you. Someone was telling me what he did with his employees because he was having that issue. So what he would do is he would hold back their wage, a little bit of a percentage of their wage every single week, put in his other account. And they had got a raise and they didn't know that they got a raise. And then at the end of the year...
I think that's illegal, actually.
No, but like...
Unless they know about it.
But at the end of the year, he gave them the money. Like, that he had held back for them. Or as they needed it, he would say, hey, look, this is what I've been doing. Here you go. I'm trying to help you. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then over time, those guys became fiscally responsible and understood. Then some of them used it as a crutch.
Right. Yeah, some of them never will. Yeah. Man, like... Yeah. But to get back to red flags on everything, I'll say one more last red flag, and it kind of ties in with everything else, is most entrepreneurs, especially in service businesses, like, doing the finances and running the books is not their forte. It's whatever their specialty is. You know, you're a subject matter expert, I'm sure, at baking cupcakes or putting coatings or welding or plumbing or whatever it is that you do. And I don't doubt that, but you're not an expert at your books. Quit being so prideful with your books and share them with somebody that you trust. Find a mentor or an accountant or somebody in your world. Show them your books and get honest feedback. If small, and listen to that feedback. Don't poo-poo what they have to say or anything else. If you would do that, you would avoid and you would have a third party who's not emotionally attached to your business to be able to tell you something. One thing I know is I'm emotional about everything in my life. You know, I am passionate about it. Like, I am not the best advice giver to me. That's why I go say, Garrett, I want to punch my kid in the head, or, you know, my wife's so stupid, blah, blah, blah. That's why you go outside of it to complain about your problems, because you are emotionally involved and that clouds your judgment. Same thing with your business, guys. Everybody out there, your business, you are emotionally attached to your business. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make the best decisions unless you have somebody else who can give you some of that advice. Get a business coach. Get somebody that's like that, because if you hold it too tightly and you're ashamed, well, they're going to see that I went to Vic and Anthony's Steakhouse and spent way too much money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to see that, man, I was irresponsible here and bought the concert tickets. That's okay. Like peel back the layers, get some honesty and do that. Because if you're not, you're going to declare bankruptcy. And look, sometimes it's okay to declare bankruptcy.
Well,
it's not.
You hit on a great point with the emotions. We're emotional beings. And so our decisions are normally emotionally founded.
Most of the time.
Yeah. And I typically identify our success and our failure with our career. A lot of pride around that. A lot of emotion around whether or not, look, the business is just a thing. It is a business. People drive it. You know, you're only as good as your team. You're only as good as decisions you make. But it's your business. It's a thing. It's not a person. It is an organization.
It's like your Red Bull or your pen or your hat. I mean,
yes, you are
a
steward.
Tool.
And if you look at it that way, you can recognize problems sooner and deal with them sooner.
Mm-hmm.
You're slow. People tend to be slow to say, hey, I need to let this person go. They are toxic and they are creating problems. They're slow to fire. You should be slow to hire. Yeah. Take all the time in the world hiring people. But when you know in your soul that that person isn't part of your world, now is a good time. Because there's no salvation, then there's no salvation on this. If you can't do it. But if you can,
you have to be able to shoot old Yeller. A good friend of mine taught me that. I'm telling you, you got to be able to shoot old Yeller.
That's great.
It sucks, and it's sad, but, you know, it's what's best for the old Yeller, and it's what's best for you. You know, it's crushing, but
every
shoot.
Every now and then, you got to kill something you love.
We should call this episode Shoot Old Yeller.
Yeah, got to learn when to shoot old Yeller.
So, I mean, yeah, that's a red flag. I mean, it's a red flag to be so emotionally attached to your identity that you cannot walk away from a necessary ending, because you're going to cause people around. You're going to cause employees harm. You're going to cause your family harm. You're going to prolong your success and your rebound.
I bought a small business 3 or 4 years ago. It was run down, second generation owner. The business was dead years beforehand, but just kept finding ways through vendor debt, all the red flags that we talked about. He had every one of them, right? He had debt. He had vendor debt. He had cash flow issues.
Hang on. I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
It is incredible at how maneuverable a 5, 10 year, 15, 20 year small business veteran can be in prolonging that death. It's incredible at how creative we can become.
No doubt. It was amazing. I was baffled. How were you able to get this much debt? Not only on his business, but his buildings.
It becomes an art.
It does. And you rob Peter to pay Paul, and you do it for years. You don't pay your taxes for 3 or 4 years. Like, you name it. Like, as I peeled back the layers, it was insane.
And I know I'm interrupting you.
No, go ahead.
When you spend 5 years in survival mode and you find some success, you don't know when to recognize it, because all you know how to do is fight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how to enjoy a peacetime.
No,
sorry.
You don't.
I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
But what I'm getting at is
he was to a point to where he should have declared bankruptcy years ago, you know. And when he came to me and I started looking into his business and pulling back his books, I'm like, hey, man, your business is not worth a dime. Like, your business is worth negative $500,000. And that's what I knew of at the time. It was actually negative more than that. And I said, the only thing of value you have here is this building. And it's only of value while you haven't declared bankruptcy. You know, so if you want me to buy your building and you really care about your, this is a 40, 50 year old business. This is not, this is a pillar of the community type business. I'll buy your business. I mean, I'll buy the building and I'll keep your business open, but I can't buy your business. There's no way. And you don't have enough equity in this building
to
pay it off, you know? So my advice to you is sell me the building for whatever the market value is. And then go talk to a bankruptcy attorney to figure out how you can shelter some of this money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's not my forte. But my point of telling that story is it was heartbreaking to watch. There were some issues there. Don't be that guy.
Yeah.
Like when your business is done, shut it down and then shut it down and even declare bankruptcy. That guy, I don't know that he's still, 3 years later, I don't know if he's still just letting it sit out there and not declaring bankruptcy and letting it, at least the process start. You know, bankruptcy, Donald Trump's declared bankruptcy a gazillion times. Freaking, you know, what was the corporation? Zachary, one of the largest contractors. They just declared Chapter 11. Like Shaw, large companies, yeah, Shaw, like there's CB&I, you know, all kind of companies have declared bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is not the end of the world, but they recognized it and they mitigated it. The first step is being self-aware and being honest with yourself. And that all goes back to let somebody look at your books. Don't rack up. If your business only makes $100,000 a year, don't rack up 3-4 times that. You'll never, don't lie to yourself saying, I'll eventually dig out of this hole. No, you won't.
Yeah. There's a phrase or saying that really comes to mind. You cannot out exercise poor diet.
You cannot. And
you cannot out earn bad spending habits.
Yeah. Or you can't outspend a broken process.
There you go.
That's true.
You can't do it.
All those things.
You can't outproduce it. So the point of that is, this is hard too. So let's go back to the very beginning, to that business startup. I wish I'd have known this. Plan the exit before you start. If you're 22 years old and you're going to start a business and you're going to operate it for 40 years, you're going to pass it on to your children, you have to plan that exit. You need to start that day one. And little things you need to learn along the way. If it's an LLC, don't personally sign for all that stuff. Sign as an employee of the company or an officer of the company, but don't personally back everything. What's the point in an LLC? If you sign for it,
I'm guilty.
So there's
of that.
A thousand of those little things. You know, those vendors have figured that out. They're going to make you personally back everything because the LLC is toilet paper if you don't. So there's a lot of little things. So I would say plan the exit on the front end too. Like you're either going to give it to your kids or you're going to sell it or you're going to just close the doors. But if you got $500,000 worth of debt, you can't do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to plan that on the front end.
Absolutely.
No doubt. Yeah, well, I hope everybody learned something today. You know, just talking about red flags. If you've noticed some of those red flags in your business right now, you know, be proactive. I would challenge you to go and find that help there locally. Talk to somebody, a mentor that you know. Talk to an accountant. Talk to a business coach. Talk to somebody. Start looking at your expenses. Start looking at your processes. See if this is fixable, and start making the positive steps. Maybe your next step is time to shut it down and go get a job. You know, I mean, that sometimes is the next step. And then that way you can wait on your next opportunity. But don't be afraid to be honest with yourself, to recognize those red flags, try to fix them if you can. And if you can't, take that next step to go ahead and shut down that business or go to your next opportunity, or maybe sell it. Maybe it's time to sell the business, you know, so maybe somebody out there it's still salvageable and that can work as well. So, you know, selling your business or closing down your business is not a forever failure. So many times we think that is. So hope you learned some things. I hope the audience can, if you have any more red flags that we didn't talk about that are business killers, man, tell us, man. I'd love to hear what you have to say, and so I can look for them in my businesses as well. So, Garrett, you got anything?
Not really. I just I think that people need to understand that, like, it's a blessing to be able to be an entrepreneur and be a small business owner.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand that you're a steward of this, and in stewardship, you're not going to know everything. So surround yourself with people that might know something that you don't know, or ask questions. You have to have that round table of individuals that you can bounce, throw the ball back and forth with. And as B would always say, staff your deficiencies. Mm-hmm. Like find those people that have that your weaknesses or their strengths, and put those people around you, and your business will grow exponentially. But if you keep everything tight to the chest and you want to be the only one that knows where the ship's going, then guess what? People are going to jump off the ship, and it probably will sink.
So, yep. Good answer. All right. Thank y'all.